Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel for this rainy Tuesday morning here in our region. It is a, I'm sure it's a beautiful day where you are.
Yeah,
maybe not. It's the 16th of September, and it's wonderful to have you with us today. Let me introduce our panel to you, and we will get started on a myriad of issues that we have to talk about. And we first welcome WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. I can't help but say the rain in Spain.
Speaking of Spain, Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain joins us. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Joe, and everybody.
And University, I'm sure you've never heard that before, right?
No, not at all,
right. And University at Albany Journalism Professor and Investigative Reporter Rosemary Armeo is with us. Good morning, Rosemary. It is it's very nice to have you all with us. Let us begin with... I thought this was interesting. I was looking through last night, and we're going to talk about ISIS and talk about the coalition. But I thought I finally found an article in the Irish Times that actually gave a list of who is signed on here.
Well,
how did you get to the Irish Times? Which is a great newspaper, by the way. I love it. But how did you get there?
I found it through the Google search. Anyway, 26 countries, including the 5 permanent members of the UN Security Council and 10 Arab states, as well as representatives of the Arab League, EU, and UN, yesterday vowed to support the new Iraqi government against the extremist group Islamic State by any means necessary, including appropriate military assistance. The Conference on Peace and Security in Iraq was convened in Paris at the initiative of the French president, who traveled to Baghdad on September 12th. And now there is a look at who is in. And then, of course, there are other articles that we've been looking at about, about the summit in Iraq. And then, of course, there's the sign on, and then... Once you signed on, then what do we do? What actually happens to make the situation better? Do you think we're in a good place?
Well, we're better than we have been in previous conflicts in this area. We have people who understand and support our position. We already talked here about how the United States, is much to blame for the destabilization that allowed this to come about. But we're past that now. So, yeah, I would say that we're in a good position. I don't know what it's going to accomplish long term. Short term, though, it should hold them back. And I also keep finding myself thinking, what was ISIS doing? They egged on the United States. This is exactly what they wanted to happen, that they have now the West allied against them. So why is that? Are they recruiting more jihadis? Mm. Are they trying to make some point that goes beyond just immediate tactical gain?
You know, Joe and Rosemary, Mike, I was... I watched the entire Roosevelt series. They sent it to me it was on, and I have so much admiration for FDR, because he saw that war coming. He knew we were going to have to get into it, but he would not move until there was really, you know, Japan and Hitler declaring war himself, which was crazy, on the United States. And then he had what, you know, he had been waiting for. And I think, you know, you got to give a lot of credit to Obama, because there are two sides to this. The left are sending me letters about this is nothing new. We shouldn't do it. We're being managed by the industrial complex, defensive complex. And on the right, he's namby-pamming around. He should be moving faster. He should be doing all of this. It's just not ready yet. So I think the idea that we're going to cover them with our air support, in other words, the Iraqi army will cover them with our air support, but we're not going to be the army, I think that means a great deal. And I think it's the best you could come up with.
Well, the public opinion has certainly changed. You're right. It's changed overnight with this documentation of these horrific war crimes that ISIS is committing. And you have to wonder, I mean, what kind of hubris they have that they could think that they could be in the face of the world and do this kind of torture and, you know, mass killings and lining people up with their, you know, in handcuffs and shooting them all and then posting it on the internet would do anything. I mean, if they think it's going to scare people, certainly it scares people, but it's also going to outrage the world. That nobody could disagree that this is just morally unacceptable, and the option to enter militarily becomes very easy.
Yeah,
it goes back to just what exactly is ISIS's strategy. They did provoke this and on purpose, and so their goal perhaps is not to defeat the United States, but it's to and embrace them in a battle so you get more fighters. The other contrast with the Roosevelts, Alan, was with Teddy Roosevelt, who was basically a horrible warmonger.
That series is not very favorable to Teddy Roosevelt.
No, not in that way.
No, but he was a warmonger. There's no two ways about it. And his face is on Rushmore, not FDR's. Hmm.
That's FDR true. Was Good president point. When Rushmore was made. That would have been a little bit
politically
difficult.
Yeah, that would have been Joe Bruno-like. is there a...
you answer them now, will you please?
Sorry. Is there... one of the things I thought was interesting in this Irish Times article is also about this meeting in Iraq when everybody gets... Or, I'm sorry, in Paris, when everybody gets together and says, the big discussion was, okay, what do we call the enemy? And they finally, because there was ISIL, ISIS, they finally have just come up with ICE, Islamic State.
That sounds like a rap tune or something.
Yeah,
I think that's is.
Is.
Not no. ICE.
Well, if you, it's ISIS or ISIL, and then you take the is and the all out, isn't that ICE?
No, it's is.
This is a good rap song. You have a little beat behind it. You've just sung it.
Well, there's even some debate over whether that's appropriate to give it the status of a state. And really what it is it's a bunch of, it's a movement.
Or we could call them the thugs.
Yeah, I mean, they are thugs or that's saying it mildly. But but language is important, and the way that you describe the enemy has meaning to everybody who has stake in this. So that's why it's, I didn't understand why Obama kept saying ISIL and everybody in the media was saying ISIS. And now I do understand it more. It's more accurate depending on which cultural viewpoint you have.
Well, the question is, do you want to call them what they want to be called?
Right. It's almost insulting to call them what they want to be called. You want to call them what you want to call them in the most pejorative way.
Right. That's why I like tea. Thugs.
Thugs. We're going to take a break. We'll come up with another couple of riffs on our rap song, and we'll be back after the short break.
Support comes from the Opelka Gallery at Sage College of Albany, featuring art exhibits and other cultural events. First this season is ceramic artist Regis Brody, sage.edu/Opelka. Golden Harvest Farms, Route 9, Vallation, New York. Pick your own apples every weekend with wagon rides, fresh-pressed cider, and donuts made daily. GoldenHarvestFarms.com. And Hawk Circle Timber Frames, Cherry Valley, New York, creating post and beam cabins, barns, retreats, and houses using local lumber and heirloom hand tools. HawkCircleTimberFrames.com.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. It is very nice to have you with us. And we're going to, Rosemary is here, Alan is here, and Mike Spain is here. We welcome your comments, roundtable@wamc.org. And we'll get to the letters in just a few moments, unless you have them right in front of you, Alan. I was just looking that I don't see them.
Tom says the streaming isn't working.
We've just alerted
our crack engineering staff to the idea that the streaming isn't working, and I know that they'll farm it out to Ray Graff and Tom Jobe immediately.
Check. And then there's the other one.
Oh, is there something else?
No.
Oh, Matt Mann is in now. Matt Mann says, let's play that old standard, I'm in an Islamic state of mind. Or not.
Okay.
We're
told that the stream is up and working fine.
Okay, the stream is up and working. We have Ray Graff in the doorway there saying, "Come on now, don't put me down this way. I keep things running around here, and they're running." So maybe on the other end, the receiver was, you know, maybe there's a problem. But in any case, it is working. I want you to know that.
All right.
You can see us. You can hear us.
There we go. Let's go on to other issues. The Ebola effort in the U.S. is committing up to 3,000 troops to fight Ebola in Africa. Under pressure to do more to confront the Ebola outbreak sweeping across West Africa, President Obama on Tuesday will announce an expansion, that's today, by the way, of military and medical resources to combat the spread of the deadly virus, according to administration officials. He'll go beyond the 25-bed portable hospital that Pentagon officials said they would establish in Liberia, one of the three West African countries ravaged by the disease.
Well, it's brilliant. I mean, it's the right thing to do. It's a great signal to Africa that we're not going to send just, you know, weapons and do that kind of stuff and get involved on that level, but we're going to use our good work because, by the way, he's been begged by some of the people who are running these countries to use United States resources to do it. And we're going to get a lot of credit for saving or helping to save lives that we might not have gotten otherwise. So I just think it's a terrific
thing. Is it enlightened self-interest? I mean, what's the motivation
it could be.
Here?
It yeah. could be. I'm sure it's enlightened self-interest.
I would like to point out that we've been totally outclassed by Cuba, which has sent a huge contingent of doctors and aides to Africa.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, Cuba, you know, Castro has always made a big deal about their vaunted medical education.
Yeah.
But this is really needed. I'm so struck. I read all the time about the doctors in Liberia and Sierra Leone there's not that many of them. They're such a precious resource in those poor countries. And they're throwing themselves into this work and they're dying.
Sure.
And in one case, there was a doctor, she's now dead, but when she was very ill, the Africans made a plea that she'd be sent, I believe she was Liberian, that she'd be sent to the United States, where, of course, we know that we have treated several people infected. And the commit was only to give her the best care possible in her own country. She's dead now.
Well, that
it's
care should
it's a shame.
Be should be exported to Liberia.
Absolutely.
And as an American taxpayer, I am happy to have my taxpayer dollars spent on this.
Yeah.
Much more than
the Middle East wars.
Yeah.
We when you think about this issue as a global issue and where it can go from here, it seems quite disturbing because there is the immediacy of kind of getting under control what we already have, but then getting ahead of it as well.
Right.
Which seems to be quite the challenge.
This is one of those world problems, like climate change as well, where any experience we get over there is in our self-interest because it's not going to just happen in Africa.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, controlling it is obvious that it's sooner or later it's going to hit here. As long as planes are going back and forth, they're not always going back and forth, but this one way or another, it's going to happen.
It also makes me want to, for one last point, makes me wish that the UN were not as contentious as it is. This is obviously something where nations could work together through the UN, for example, to control airlines and flights back and forth and shutting down airspace. That's something that, with cooperation, they could do very well.
Why don't you think they can even now?
Oh, because the UN is so highly politicized and you don't support the UN. We don't even give money to, have we gone back to giving money to UNESCO? I mean, I don't understand that at all. The U.S. does not support them.
We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We will be back in just a few moments to continue our conversation. But in the meantime, you can write us a note, roundtable at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue, along with Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain, our wonderful panel. And we welcome your wonderful letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. And we'll get to those in just a moment. While we bring those up and make them available to us, we will have Mike Spain tell us about a very interesting story in the paper this morning from Casey Seiler.
Yeah, Casey, our state editor, has a story today that explains that, unlike his father, Governor Mario Cuomo, Governor Andrew Cuomo spends very little time at the executive mansion in Albany. As many people may remember from the 1980s into the 90s, Mario Cuomo lived here.
He lived here.
Yep.
He never had a lot of money, you know. So I think that was part of it. He lived in the mansion. He went out and he played b-ball on the public courts.
That's right.
With people and had fun doing that. And
one time he actually drove to a convenience store or something, and it was a big story. He hadn't driven in years, but made a little story. But that's not the case, and it hasn't been the case with other governors. You know, in fairness to Governor Andrew Cuomo, they spend a lot of time downstate where they're from. Governor Pataki spent a lot of time at his home in Garrison, which is in Putnam County, not too far from where Andrew Cuomo makes his residence in Upper Westchester County.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, some people have criticized them for it. They say that, the mansion is a resource here. But I think all it really demonstrates is that where the power is where the governor is. And when the governor's down there, that's where the power is. So it's really kind of up to the governor. I don't know. It takes a little bit of, maybe you can argue that we have all the resources here and it's being supported, the mansion is being supported, and the governor doesn't take advantage of it, which I guess, you know, Mike Bloomberg didn't live in Gracie Mansion.
Nelson Rockefeller spent most of his time in New York City, sort of setting it that way. But I do remember there was a great delicatessen in Joe's. And I remember going
Madison
there.
On Madison Avenue.
Yeah. Yeah. I would go in there, and there would be Nelson Rockefeller, his attorney general, and the
Louis
two
Lefkowitz?
Leaders, yeah, Louis Lefkowitz, and the two and the two leaders of the legislature. And they would be having these gigantic triple-decker, you know, sandwiches. We don't have that Joe's anymore. It's a great loss. I've been mourning it ever since.
Well, you know, maybe if we had a better deli.
Yeah, there you go. If we had a better deli.
Governor Cuomo would spend more time.
Well, but of course, it does lead to the inevitable question as to whether, and Jerry Jennings once got very mad at me for saying this, whether New York City ought to be the capital, since that's where they're all spending their time anyway.
Well, I like the idea that
You write for the, you're the Albany Times
Union.
Capital
region people,
Well, and we're WAMC. I mean, I don't think we'd want it in New York City.
Well, but we're fearless journalists, so we follow the logic wherever it goes, no matter what.
It is interesting that the governor did not do well in the primary in this area.
Well, that's what I was just going to ask you.
And that's probably why, Rosemary.
Well, yeah.
Maybe if he was going to delicatessens
and we're
Albany.
Not taking it anymore.
He's only been here 3 days since the end of the legislative session. And, you know, last year during that same period, he was here about 12 days, which is more presence. And he's, you know, perhaps he's just
days
trying
is
to
a vacation.
Avoid.
That's not a residence, is it?
Here.
No.
Yeah.
Well.
But, yeah, I mean, it's the way that it is. He's here when he has to be. And I guess that would be what his people say.
And because I don't think it was a brief run, but the Elliot Spitzer didn't spend much time in the mansion.
Beats
either,
me. So. We were not that intimate.
He didn't like to patronize local delis.
Well, moving on. I just realized what I walked into on that one. We have letters, Alan.
Yeah, we have some letters here. There's no question. Well, the guy who was wrong about the stream says now he's not going to listen to us anymore. He's going to listen to competitors. I just can't get over all of these nice people. And Michael says, Michael said something, but it doesn't show. It says loading, Joe. What does that mean?
Loading. It's probably that it's loading, but I don't know.
Okay. So Michael should be there. Michael should be there. Michael. Okay. Here it is. With such broad-ranging recruitment capabilities of ISIS, what are the repercussions of military action? Will there be a terrorist attack on home soil? Well, Michael, speaking for me, being Alan, it hasn't seemed to stop them before. We have the World Trade Center. Look, if they can, they will. If they can behead somebody in order to cause fear, what in the world would make you think that, you know, they're not, that by being playing nicey-nicey with them on any level, they're not going to keep doing what they're doing and try to instill terror? That would be my view of it. I don't know.
I don't think there's any negotiating intended with a group like this. It's to really stamp them out or, you know, degrade them, as the term goes, you know, make them unable to expand and grow.
Walker says there is also, it's a longer letter, but there's also legitimate concern about using the word Islamic because it will add to the fear mongering and bias of people who are moderate Muslims.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Wait, now I don't get that.
Well, he's saying by using in the name ISIS.
They choose to use the name Islamic, but as Cameron, you know, the Prime Minister of Great Britain said after the Brit was beheaded by ISIS, said, you know, these are not Islamic, these are monsters, you know, and to let them brand themselves as Islamics really is an insult to other people of Islam.
And Josh says, I believe they started calling it something else because there was a government agency, a government program called ISIS. In fact, this is our name for a group. This is not their own name. You can look it up on the internet. You can find they're actually called something else. Let's see, we've done Batman, we've got those guys a lot, you know, I mean, sort of one-ish to a customer-ish.
Ish.
You know what I mean? No, I think that's it. Do you got anything else there, Joe?
Looks good to me. We were coming out of the break and talking about Ebola, and I do want to just segue into the story about hepatitis and the hepatitis drug. The maker of one of the costliest drugs in the world announced on Monday that it had struck deals with 7 generic drug makers in India to sell lower cost versions of the medicine, a $1,000 a pill hepatitis C treatment in poorer countries.
Is that what they charge here, or is it what they charge there?
No, that's what they charge here, and
the new
generics will be something like 100 times lower. Is my math right? It would be like $10 a pill, which, by the way, is still out of the reach of many third world denizens.
So I can just see some people getting on the plane from here to go there.
The question I had, and maybe I saw it. I didn't catch it if it was in the article, which is what the dosage is. I mean, how often do you have to?
Yeah, they say that the cost, the course of treatment here would be about $1,800.
Okay.
But in India, it's a different strain of hepatitis C, for example, and so you would need more pills. So it's not exactly worked out.
And this brings up to a larger issue of why these, and this article gets into it, of why these medications have to be so costly, and what it is that holds them up, especially when we're talking about a health crisis in a part of the world where we can streamline this, make it cheaper, and get people better.
Well, the bottom line, obviously, to the drug makers is moolah. Money.
Profit.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And,
they say if you take the profit motive away, there won't be development of these
great
drugs.
That's what they
say. Well, and indeed, American pharmaceutical companies do amazing research and they come up with astounding drugs. So there is something to that. They also can't stand bad publicity, of which they got a ton when it turned out that HIV, anti-HIV drugs were being withheld from countries that couldn't afford them, like in Africa. So I think this hepatitis C effort is designed to prevent that kind of bad publicity.
Yeah, and there was a quick reaction. I mean, it's $10 a pill is still extremely expensive, but there should be aid from wealthier countries like the one we live in to assist countries that can't afford it.
Which is, of course, sustaining the drug companies. And by the way, I take a little bit of an issue, not all issue, but a little bit with you, Rosemary, in that one of the things that NIH does well is the basic science that leads to the development of many of these drugs. So that
our taxpayer money is going to a lot of the work.
But you're right. Yeah. I mean, you know, you still have to test it. You still have to go through all of the business of, you know, finding subjects and double blinds and things of that kind. But it should be noted that the United States government and we pay for a good deal of the development of those drugs, the basic science that is then used by these drug companies.
The drug companies, this particular drug company, 19%. Of their revenue is used for research. They are estimated this particular drug went on sale in December. It is on pace to exceed $10 billion in sales in 2014.
That's a lot.
It's a lot of money. And so it was quick, of course, to there was criticism was quick of, over the price. And researchers say that they will still profit from sales of this Sovaldi, which is the particular medication we're talking about, even when it cuts the drug's price by 99%, and which is ultimately fueling controversy over the company's profits even more and increasing calls for the government to negotiate directly with drug makers for volume discounts in federal Medicare program negotiations that are presently forbidden by law.
Yeah, so the question we ask ourselves is, should drugs in a country which prides itself on its emerging health care, should drugs be free? I mean, you know, to me, the idea that you're going to make it easy to get to a doctor, but you're not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy to pay for the drugs when there are these huge markups on them.
The worst offense, wrong. One that could easily be fixed, seems to me to be that Medicare can't negotiate on volume.
Yeah. How that got written into the law is just shows.
Well, we know
the
power.
Another present from George W. Bush's administration. Yeah.
And to be perfectly cynical, if they become too available and too easily available, they'll lose their market.
Right.
People will be cured and they won't have to use these drugs.
And Rosemary, to answer your question about how this happened, it's as American as apple pie, fee for service. You give the money, you get it. You never say into a microphone, because that would be go to jail time. If you do this and keep this up, we'll give you all the money you want for your campaign. It's just understood.
Mm-hmm.
You just give the money and it's understood.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and go to more letters and finish up with a couple more issues that we have for this morning. Alan, Rosemary, Mike, and your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org after this short break.
Support comes from Saratoga Bridges, Boston Spa, New York, a community resource for people with disabilities and their families, supported employment day services and more. SaratogaBridges.org. Aussie Day Spa at the Turning Stone Resort, offering an overnight package including a one-night accommodation and one 50-minute service. TurningStone.com. And 10,000 Villages in Stuyvesant Plaza, Albany, featuring fairly traded home decor and gifts handcrafted by artisans around the world. 10,000villages.com for additional store locations.
Good morning. Welcome.
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Yeah.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning. Let us go over to a couple of issues. We'll have a bit of a bonus round this morning and go to some other things that are happening. Sometimes there are just stories that I do not understand for the life of me. Urban Outfitters. What hell were they thinking?
The Kent State bloodstained.
All right, so,
oh, my gosh.
Urban Outfitters. This is the thing. For anybody, if you just put in Urban Outfitters Kent State, you'll see the picture of the product that they were selling. I don't know what I'm more mad about: the fact that this happened, or that they are trying to
capitalize.
No, that they are trying to say that we're reading something into it. I guess I think
sorry
that's
if
what,
anyone was offended by this.
So
read it the wrong way.
Well, what they did?
Tell everybody what happened.
Urban Outfitters put in a vintage Kent State sweatshirt that they offered for $129. The shirt was decorated with a blood spatter like pattern reminiscent of the 1970 Kent State massacre that left 4 people dead. The it did not take long before outrage spread, and it also did not take long once the outrage spread for the sweatshirts to completely sell out at Urban Outfitters across the country.
Amazing.
Urban Outfitters issued an apology from the product, and I think this is what made me so mad.
Yeah, the wording.
Claiming that the product was, quote, purchased as part of our sun-faded vintage collection, the company added that the bright red stains and holes were certainly, which certainly seemed to suggest blood, were simply, quote, discoloration from the original shade of the shirt, and the holes are from natural wear and fray.
Oh, God. That's terrible.
That's terrible.
That's not believable.
That is not believable. And why don't you even, I just own up to it.
Somebody
we screwed up.
Somebody went to business school for that?
You know, arguably, somebody might like to wear a shirt like this to be in solidarity with the 4 who died and all those who were protesting the war in 1970 in Kent State, sure, in Ohio, perhaps. But they shouldn't pretend that it isn't anything but that.
And I mean, also, yeah, and then, I agree with you, and then also don't profit from it.
And also, the sellout is so interesting, Joe. The idea that this thing would sell out. I'm thinking about the malformed Lincoln penny, which had something on it. You know, people would say, well, you know, I'm going to get one of these because this is going to be worth something. because they're going to clearly have to cancel this out.
Well, and what happened is with the sellout now, that I forget how many shirts were made, but now there's something like 200 of them on eBay, and they're going for $550 or whatever. So, you know, there's thought to be some
sort
of...
That's what I said. That's what I meant.
Yeah. So, exactly. You know, it's just, it's really quite...
starting bid of $550.
Yes. Although the person at least is putting up saying that their part of the profits are going to go, the actual money that goes above is going to go to the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Kent State was not too happy about this either.
No.
So
Kent State puts out a statement and says, do I have the statement here? It was great. This item is beyond poor taste and trivializes a loss of life that still hurts the Kent State community today. We invite the leaders of this company as well as anyone who invested in this item to tour our May 4 Visitor Center, which opened 2 years ago to gain perspective on what happened 44 years ago and apply its meaning to the future.
Urban Outfitters also issued an apology where they, you know, say that they never intended to allude to the tragic events that took place in Kent State in 1970. Duh.
Yeah, I don't buy it, though. I'm sorry.
We don't know our history. We do not know our history in the United States.
You know, maybe that's the one benefit of this. It is, you know, we're all assuming everybody knows what we're talking about, but during the Vietnam War, there was a protest on the campus of Kent State in Ohio, and National Guardsmen came out using real bullets. 4 student protesters were killed.
Actually, they weren't even protesters.
Right, they were
students
there.
Students killed were on campus.
There were
they
some
were not
bystanders.
Protesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This this event is often thought to be the major catalyst for ending the war.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It is so. That was one thing in the news that I wanted to get to. There is also let me find this one other story about Adrian Peters is who was we didn't really talk too much about the story about further problems in the NFL where a player on Friday was.
Well, he was allowed to play, right?
Well, no, he was taken off. It was to a game, one game for pulled from a game on against the New England Patriots on Sunday for alleged child abuse, and that a child had reported being beaten by a switch, a branch.
Yeah, he called the father called it a switch. Everybody else has been calling it a
4
branch.
Years old.
4 years old, but beat him on the legs and the scrotum and did
and had open
damage.
Sores.
Yeah.
Yeah, and had
wounds.
Wounds. That's right. So now the NFL, as if they don't have enough trouble, has cleared. He is now cleared to play in the upcoming game. So it basically ended up to be a one game suspension for this particular case. Although further charges may come out of this. So.
These are not good optics for the NFL. You know, two game suspension if you punch out your and make your fiance unconscious, and one game suspension if you strike a 4-year-old child
and then let back in. Apparently. Then,
yeah. Right. Well, the Vikings say that he has been that they have cleared him and that he will participate in practices and meetings this week.
I just want to say. In this country, you're innocent until proven guilty. And these guys are getting let go by courts, not by the NFL. It's all very nice that we're holding the NFL accountable, but this is a court problem.
Well, it is a big question. Well,
but
it may
behavior
be.
Can
it may
result
be.
In temporary suspensions. I mean, if you're in a public position and you're charged with a crime, you'll be suspended immediately while
we
your
don't
case...
demand that of our legislators.
Well,
we
two
demand
wrongs
it of our
make
teachers
a right.
and our other public servants, and two, I think it's reasonable.
Two wrongs don't make a right, Rosemary. That's not a
well,
good
well, also, idea. You know it going in. That's part of your contract. You sign a code of conduct. Sure. Conduct. You sign it going in for your millions of dollars that you're getting, and you have just these strangest rules. I mean, in NASCAR, if a driver swears, they can get benched. So.
But not if they run over a guy who's in the road and kills him, because it might be an accident. And in this case, not Ray Rice, but the child abuser, alleged a child abuser, believes that he was simply disciplining his child.
That must
be decided by a court.
Yeah, that becomes a complicated cultural issue,
well,
I guess.
Yes, it does.
Yes,
and
very,
it also is a question as to what our expectations of these guys, who, after all, are tough people.
Right.
Not all. I never said all, but many of them are. They're very tough, and they are recruited because they have that stuff in them. And now we're going to say, we're going to reverse field. So that's a tough one.
Are you coming around to my way of thinking?
No. Remind me what your way of thinking is, and I'll be sure to be
innocent
on the other side.
Innocent until proven guilty.
Right. This is not up to the NFL to decide. It's up to courts, and they seem to be falling down.
It's up to the court to decide his fate of whether for criminal charges. But as far as the code of conduct in the NFL and how it looks to have someone representing you until these charges have been answered, then that player, in my mind, shouldn't be on the field.
Okay, we're going to have to go, but I wanted to just mention that Carrie said that we could fill the governor's mansion with homeless people.
There you go. Yeah. Open it up. They closed the last one down there, didn't they? The shelter?
Yeah.
Well, we got to go. WAMC.org. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be back tomorrow, and the roundtable continues after this.